At California Closets, we design for the little things. Take this moment of a woman getting dressed for an early meeting while her husband's still asleep.
Ah, sorry.
And now, the California Closets version of that moment, featuring custom soft close drawers. Bedroom and home storage solutions by designers who get you. California Closets. More room for what matters.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police who investigate crime and the district attorney who prosecute the offenders. But this is the TV Pilot's License, where we talk about one episode and judge it to our heart's delight. No law, and definitely no order. Welcome to the TV Pilot's License. My name is Jeff Kerbis, joined by Rich Inman and Max Singer. How are you boys doing today?
Bow, 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 bow.
We will be criminally prosecuting people, though. So, resident alien, you are going to jail.
Oh, my gosh. Gentlemen, this week we are talking about Law and Order, the original series. We're not talking SVU. We're not talking Criminal Intent. We're not talking UK, but instead we're focusing and we're going back to the year 1990. But Max, before we dive too deeply into this classic, do you mind telling folks what this podcast is all about?
Here at TV Pilot's License, we break down and analyze the pilot episodes of some of TV's most famous, or in some cases, infamous shows. We learn more about how these shows came to be and were originally made, if they're effective. Why are you showing me a penguin, Rick? What are you doing?
You started laughing. I didn't know what to do.
So you show me a penguin? Get out of here with that. Get out of here, penguin. If they're effective pilot episodes and making us want to watch more than we made today, go back and stream our old episodes from wherever you listen to podcasts. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok to see our smiling faces and Rich's penguin. And if it is your first time flying with us, then welcome aboard.
Gentlemen, before we go to sponsor, I have a very important question for the two of you. Were you living, or did you grow up in Law and Order households where like Law and Order was something that you watched every week, or like Rich, maybe for your family they had an edible and you're sitting down and watching an episode of Law and Order?
Let's not retcon my childhood here. at no point were my parents, David and Emily Inman, on drugs while they were raising
drop
me.
Your parents. There's hey, other look, Inmans out there.
I have learned a lot from this episode of Law and Order, and one of them is that you need to get a lot of things on the record.
Oh my gosh, Max, what about you? Were you did you grow up in a Law and Order family?
We weren't a Law and Order household, although I did grow up outside of New York City, and so I know a lot of people who talk like in this pilot. The closest I have is going to a taping of Celebrity Jeopardy at Radio City Music Hall that was all Law and Order themed. All the episodes they taped that day were people on Law and Order.
Okay.
But the sound effect for the dun-dun broke, and they had to pause production because it was going off for like a half hour straight.
That's amazing. So it was just going dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun?
Just dun-dun-dun-dun.
The oh my worst God. Dun, version dun. Of Jaws. Like
wow, you would put Mariska Hargitay in like a PTSD spiral from that.
Well, gentlemen, before we dive too deep into Law and Order, a quick word from our sponsor.
At California Closets, we design for the little things. Take this moment of a family getting ready to leave the house.
Where's my backpack?
Mom, I need my cleats.
My wallet was right here.
If I trip over these shoes one more time.
And now, the California Closets version of that moment. Entryway and home storage solutions by designers who get you. California Closets. More room for what matters.
Dun dun.
Well, let's dive in to the world of Dick Wolf and Law and Order. And we're going to start off with a quick synopsis. This actually is a pretty meaty one, so buckle up.
Okay.
A two-part drama that focuses on the New York criminal justice system by showing a violent crime investigated by police detectives in the first half and the trial of the accused in court by prosecutors in the second half. That literally is what we watched. But Max, can you tell us a little bit more about how this show got made?
Today, we're talking about the pilot episode of Law & Order titled Prescription for Death, which originally aired on September 13th, 1990 on NBC, and the show's creator, Dick Wolf. Dick Wolf began his career in advertising while writing screenplays on the side, even becoming friends and collaborating with Oliver Stone before either one found success. After moving to Los Angeles, Wolf became a writer on Hill Street Blues, receiving his first Emmy nomination. He later joins the staff at Miami Vice, serving as a writer and producer on the show's third and fourth seasons. Branching out to create his own series unfortunately leads to a quick series of flops for Wolf, all lasting just one season, including a Mission Impossible spinoff titled Help, an anthropology crime drama, Gideon Oliver, and a Vegas Narcotics Bureau drama titled Nasty Boys.
Oh no, not Nasty Boys.
The precursor to
Shasta
McNasty.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Wolf begins developing a concept for a new series based around the American justice system. The episodes will be split into two parts. The first half would follow two homicide detectives and their commanding officer, while the second half would focus on the office of the district attorney. Originally titled Night and Day, Wolf pitches the series to Universal Television, who note the series is similar to a show called Arrested Trial from 1963, which only lasted one season. Wolf decides the solution is to dig deeper into realism. Detectives would at times be fallible. The DA wouldn't always get the result they wanted. The show would also feature stories ripped from the headlines, with plotlines mirroring real-life incidents and news stories. The pitch was initially sold to Fox, who ordered 13 episodes without a pilot being filmed. However, the decision was reversed when the network head decided it didn't feel like a Fox show. The show then ended up at CBS, who filmed a different pilot but did not order it to series because they believed there were no breakout stars in the cast. This 1989 CBS pilot ends up being viewed by Warren Littlefield and Brandon Tartikoff, a name we haven't mentioned in a while here on TVPL.
Tardy.
B-tarts. Although they had concerns that the show would not be able to repeat the same level of intensity week after week, they picked up the show with a full series order. That original pilot, titled Everybody's Favorite Bagman, would eventually be used as the sixth episode of season one. Interior sets for the show were built at Chelsea Piers, and the rest was filmed on location in New York City. A rip from the headlines fact, today's pilot is based on the death of Libby Zion in 1984 and the subsequent state investigation and civil trial, which eventually led to reforms in New York State on the maximum number of hours residents can work per week and maximum length of consecutive hours worked. Today's pilot is directed by John Whitesell, a Daytime Emmy winner for his work on Guiding Light, and director of the feature films Malibu's Most Wanted and Big Mama's House 2.
What?
Yeah, John Incel was busy that day. Sorry, badoomch. Well, gentlemen, let's dive into the world of Law & Order. And
yeah, I just want to pause this here really quick because I watched Dick Wolf's Nasty Boys, but the only way I was able to find it was on a VHS in the woods.
So this series, I think, has become so famous for the intro with no music behind it, right? Just the idea of what is setting up the premise of what this entire show is going to be, what you're going to see. And I, you know, I did a little riff of it for the intro of this episode, but I'm curious for the two of you, along with the longest intro song and montage I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of just seeing this for the first time from the view and the perspective of a pilot made, Max, before you were born, before all of us were born, I think?
When was it again?
September 13th, 1990.
Oh, 5 days before I was born, baby.
Yeah.
I exclusively grew up in a Dick Wolf world.
So, but what did you think of this beginning, this, you know, two-sentence phrase that really kicks us off?
It establishes the seriousness of it pretty off the bat. Like, whoever did the voiceover for it, I assume they're uncredited in the on the episode and stuff like that. Or, I don't know, you guys are both smiling like you both know who it is that recorded this. But but that's like, that you could not pick a more serious voice actor than that. That guy sounds like he should be, like, delivering instructions at TSA.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I need him giving me, like, commands for how to put together furniture. I need him doing Powerball numbers. I just need this person to narrate my life. We see this happen in pilots sometimes where it's like there's an overview or a little bit of a lead-in that kind of sells you on the presentational elements of a pilot. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing that this one has been a defining feature of this franchise and all of its spinoffs for 36 years. This thing that feels like such a pilot-only detail is one of the most defining traits of the show.
It's one of those things, like, I know I didn't speak about the Law & Order household, but I grew up in a Law & Order household, right? When was on butts and seats, we are watching something that is serious and sad for the next hour of our time. And
get in here, family. We got to watch the latest murder.
We need to see this person get murdered, and who knows if they win the trial. But it's one of those things where you hear this voice, and it's almost like an involuntary response of like, okay, something's about to happen on the screen that I need to watch. This is the tone, the seriousness of it, the very much stating the two worlds that we're going to see. It does such a nice job. And I say that to go along with, why was there a 4-minute intro montage on this pilot? I don't know if it was actually 4 minutes, but it felt like forever.
It is a absolute, this is on the Mount Rushmore of TV theme songs, though. This is, there's nothing more ubiquitous than the Law and Order theme. It is, it's so serious. It's got a truly dramatic use of oboe, which I think a lot of theme songs are lacking. And I don't know. There's just like, it gets you in the right mindset for watching something very serious. And it almost takes away any chance of the show being hokey if you set it up like this, I guess. Does that make sense?
But Rich, you know what? I'm going to challenge you. No matter how iconic something is, we've all been at the wedding where they decide to play the entirety of Cha-Cha Slide, and we all say, you know, this is a great minute of my time. I don't need to be going to the left and going to the right and taking it back now, y'all, for 4 minutes.
I can only cha-cha real smooth so many times.
Yeah, like when a TV show has the full theme for the first season or two, and then it's just like a quick little tag by season three.
And then they're like, we all know why we're here. We're all here together.
This is the second legal show from relatively around this time, though, that has like a super jazzy intro. Like if you were doing anything in a court of law, I'm talking about Night Court, of course, you need to have that smooth, smooth jazz. But while that is like bright and saxophones and like sexy downtown Manhattan, this is like deep with like timpanis and basses going. Like you can tell that this is not going to be Night Court, also on NBC. They were keeping jazz musicians employed at this time at that network.
If you could play a funky keyboard, you were getting a third house in the Hamptons.
The NBC in-house jazz orchestra.
I want to talk a little bit about why today is different. This is a procedural-based show, right? Like, we are going in. Every single week, there's going to be a new case of the week is how we're set up in this show. And today's case sets us up in, we are in a very, very busy ER that seems so utterly chaotic, almost like it is straight out of the pit. But instead, we see something that appears to be some medical malpractice happening in front of us, asking the question of, can you actually sue a doctor if you die? So I'm curious, Max, what are your thoughts of why today is different and maybe what this about the crime that we're going to be facing today?
Well, I think you're absolutely right in that the way Law and Order is structured in this rip from the headline style, every single day is going to be, why is today different? You are running a perpetual motion of why is today different, which is really interesting as a concept. I like how we establish tone right off the jump, where it is fast moving. I think the camera work throughout this is really fascinating. I couldn't tell if this was a lot of handy cam because it's not locked. There's kind of this balance. We shift up and down a lot. It feels almost naturalistic in how the camera is moving. And you just get this feeling of, I am going to be carried through this whirlwind of crime into investigation. Like, I didn't know where it was going to go in the beginning, and it did come across as captivating to me.
Here's where I think they made the absolute right choice having this take place in a hospital. The first crime is that they are trying to capture so many different procedural audiences at the same time of like, hey, we know ER was not out yet, but there were medical shows at that time for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're establishing a lot of people who respect the job. They want to know what's going on inside there. They want to see the inner machinations of a hospital. And then you're also essentially pitting two first responder jobs against each yeah. other. And so you have so much inside baseball talk, basically, which is what this is. It's like, it is the competency porn thing. It is, I want to see detectives who are good at their jobs. I want to see the doctors who are good at their jobs.
Well, and it's complicated because if episode one is a murder on the street, we're mm-hmm. all leaning in one direction. We're just going, well, I want to see this person get convicted. But you're setting up this real complicated dilemma for the audience and for the people in this world, too, of can you prosecute a doctor? You know, how you view the medical world. And these characters get into how complicated that is, too. There's some very, very funny lines about the medical profession in this episode later on. But it would be so easy to make it an open and shut case. And I think this is the right one to make your true pilot.
Can we also shout out that the main person surrounds like the overall victim of this is John Spencer from The West Wing. How fucking cool who appears really young. Like he aged considerably.
Well, in 7 months. But this is 2 months before he starts starring on L.A. Law on NBC, mm-hmm. too.
Oh, my God. They stole the playbook.
Look, let's just get into it. Obviously, there is an assumption about Law and Order that every single episode you're going to see faces you know. The joke about how every single actor mm-hmm. has been on Law and Order at some point. Mm-hmm. Right off of the bat, you get John Spencer, who's going to live on TV at NBC mm-hmm. throughout the 90s. Yep. You get Eric Avari, who has been in Mr. Deeds and The Mummy yep. and all of these things. Also Encino Man. I love that movie. And then, the most important one of all, you know who plays Suzanne Morton? You know who plays the dead body?
Who's that?
That's Erica Jade from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
That's insanity.
What?
That's absolutely she bonkers. Plays the first... No.
That is a truly, like... What an unbelievable two truths and a lie to have of I played the first victim ever on Law and Order.
The first body on Law and Order is a housewife. How incredible is that?
That's incredible. I love it.
Also, and Bravo keeping it in the NBC Universal family.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, once you're on Law and Order, you cannot
Andy
leave.
Cohen has been truly playing the long game forever.
When I was researching for my game of the week this week, I actually saw several people who were on this show before, like they were victims or they were they were murderers or they mm-hmm. played like a witness or something like that before they got picked up as a detective or
yeah I
on the show.
Yeah, I have a family friend who is one of those that I...
What?
We'll talk about that another time. But
look, the Law and Order universe is vast and confusing.
It is. It's insanity, and it's a well-run machine. But, gentlemen, I want to approach this pilot like this show approaches every single episode, which is there are two very distinct parts of this episode, which is us building a case.
Yeah. And then what's the and?
Yeah. There's actually three parts. I'm so sorry. Yeah, right?
Three acts.
Yeah. What I want to talk about this from the perspective of working and building the case and going into this trial and seeing this separation of the detectives versus our attorneys who are trying to fulfill the promise that the detectives have built for them. So let's talk about building the case. We get to see the beat itself of Logan and Greavy really trying to figure out what the fuck happened here and why this girl who seemingly just had a sore throat is now dead. And Max...
These are first draft names, by the way. You do not name someone. You do not name an important character that close to Greavy.
I was going to say, Max, do you have any big feelings about a certain character appearing?
No one tell Rich the DA is named Adam Schiff.
Hey, that's my congressman.
Senator, now.
Senator.
I couldn't. get over Chris Noth, Mr. Big of Sex and the City, playing the young hotshot detective.
I know.
It is so funny. And also, listen, I will go to the mat badly for Sex and the City, as is well established.
Yeah.
He is so much more like alive and vibrant and charismatic yes. as Detective Logan. I really like him as the young hotshot on the beat. I like seeing him interact with these people as they build their case. And this pairing of him and Sergeant Greavy, who's kind of like, you know, the older, kind of gruffer version. It's a fun pairing. And I like seeing how they move throughout the scenes. I like that we go beat to beat to beat. I like how one line from a character that they're interviewing can suddenly throw you into a whole new scene. Like, we are constantly like exiting early from things as we follow them. And I was actually really engaged with putting together this case.
The way you bounce from witness to witness and like watching them build a case can be like, it has evolved and improved story writing wise,
sure.
like throughout the history of Law and Order. This is very like bow, bow, bow. Like every scene is like one page maximum.
I think that there's two things, right? I love the idea of how snappy it is, right? Of like, mm-hmm. rather than, I think a lot of procedurals that we see today, they're like, but what makes this cop get up in the morning, right? Like what did they eat for breakfast today? And like, did they poop or not?
Right.
is the stuff that we approach in procedurals. And like, this is the basis for a lot of procedurals that we watch today. And the idea of, hey, you might find out something about this cop like we do about the attorney at the end of this show, right? But we're caring more about the case itself and how this was solved. And like that chemistry between Chris Noth and George Zunza is so... it's such a great combination because you have this guy who's a little bit more hardened next to Noth, who gets to be suave. He gets to be like the smooth, almost like the good cop, even though he doesn't seem like that like nice of a guy. It's such a fun combo to start this pilot off with.
Yeah.
Even though I don't know, hey, maybe we won't get them every single episode, but I'm really liking these two.
I also just got to give a shout out to the building of the New York of it all in this pilot, because when they're going on their beat, when they're doing their interviews, there is one beat cop who they talk to who is sitting on the hood of his cruiser and gets handed a slice of pizza on a paper plate.
Hell yeah,
and has
baby.
The thickest New York accent I have ever heard. And I was like, oh man, that is Mayor David Dinkins' New York City right there. This guy is hilarious.
There is a I was looking into like some of the behind the scenes of like how the show like came to be and why they chose to like build that studio in Chelsea Piers and stuff like that. And Dick Wolf and the people who are like producing it with him, we're just like, it's the only way I can get full New York accents out of all the cops that we're going to talk to is if we film it in New York, because they did like try to film it in L.A. for a while. And they're like, yeah, it just doesn't feel as real. It doesn't feel as like unique. But every single actor in New York can do a New York accent.
The props department couldn't get that perfect foldable New York slice.
They couldn't get the water, as we all know. I mean,
it's the pH levels.
That perfect foldable New York cab.
The handicam just doesn't look the same when you do it in L.A. I want to hear from the two of you as far as like there's this acting. We have these two great performances. Rich, you mentioned the beats and how quick and snappy building mm-hmm. this case is. Were there any other moments of this first portion, this first half of this pilot that you were really enchanted by, or maybe you found interesting, or maybe an odd choice?
They do a really good job of like, and like you were saying, Jeff, there's other police procedurals where you get like you're getting more of a background into the individual characters. In this, you just get slivers. Like for like especially for Greavy, it's made very clear up front that he is distrustful of doctors. And you get a little bit of backstory that explains why they think this way. and what could have like led them to distrust this person that they were interviewing as a witness, or and stuff like that. And they do a good job of that, because it's not overwhelming. Everything is just about the case. It's all over and over and over. It's just about the case. And knowing, you know, and I guess if you were an audience member, when this pilot came out, you're not necessarily going into this show expecting there to be some serious coverage with the trial element of it. Like you got the law, baby. You're never going to see the order coming. And when you know that there's going to be more to it, it's like, you're like, oh yes, they might have solved this case. That's only a small part of it. Whereas like if you're watching a show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it's like they catch the perp, it's over. That's game.
Max, what about yourself?
I think that building an argument around like the court of public opinion and this thing that isn't really beholden to either law or order, but just how we perceive people is interesting. And this conflict of pieces are starting to fall into place. We're starting to understand what we think happened here, but does this have legs? Will people go for it, or is it a dead end because of who we're discussing here? I think that's a very deep, complicated thing to get into. Something that also I found interesting in building this case is just some of the 1990 of it all with how we perceive mental health as they're understanding Suzanne's case and her history. There's a kind of throwaway of, well, she was seeing a psychiatrist and she got pills, and Chris Noth just makes this snide remark of, she was seeing a shrink, which is when he felt very Mr. Big to me. And the sort of dismissal of her seeing a psychiatrist and getting prescription medication for a mental health issue felt like something that was a little blast from the past compared to how we would discuss it now.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree. And that's just and what's interesting, too, is that because we've had my entire life an evolution of how Law and Order is written, and that you can visibly see. I watched an episode of SVU 2 days ago. There is a visible change in how things are discussed. There is a significantly more victim friendly dialogue that is interwoven through all of this. And yeah, it's just fascinating to see like where everyone's heads were in 1990 versus where it is.
Well, gentlemen, we've talked about the law. Let's talk a little bit about the order, the passing off of this case to our attorney district or our assistant district attorneys. In this instance, we have Ben Stone and Paul Robinette. And Max, I want to just start off of it goes from feeling like, hey, our detectives have done a really good job of building this case, of like finding the evidence that this Dr. Edward Oster is a bad guy and he 100% should be going to prison. But instead of saying like, you know, this second half of the show, what if we all just had a cup of coffee and relaxed a little bit and all agreed this is a bad guy? Instead, we get the attorney representing Edward Oster, played by Ron Rifkin, come in hot and give us a lay of what the land is. And this scene, for some reason, I was just like, I think Max has thoughts about Ron Rifkin, so I want to hear about you. you seeing this guy come in like the hotshot New York lawyer he is.
Yeah, this is a big shift, because we go from, as we've established, bouncing from scene to scene to scene, building this story, constantly moving to, we are now locked into this one location. I feel like it's a big total shift. And the way that the show feels definitely goes through a significant change. Look, this guy's a dick, but like that's obviously his job, and it's his job to protect his high profile client. And I'm glad in a way that this doesn't feel like My Cousin Vinny or Legally Blonde. There's not this massive outburst when
the
twist comes.
The defense is wrong.
when the twist comes, when the reveal comes, when like the ace in the hole moment finally happens, it's not presented as this incredible gotcha. It's not cinematic. It's just what it is. And I think that's what makes Law and Order special, is the restraint from going that route, from not having it be the big moment where the orchestra kicks in, but just having it be part of the day, part of the course of action.
Right. It's almost kind of a slap in the face, right? Because you're watching these two detectives build their case over the past 30 minutes. Like, you were watching, you're like, oh, okay, we're understanding more about the perpetrator, more about the victim. All right, we're understanding where we're going with that. Then defense attorney just comes and smacks you around. Like, no, everything you just heard was false. And that is really like, you know, I guess they are trying to go in with a kind of a reality check to, which is what cops have to face anyways, because they're like, yeah, we're building a case on hunches. Here's why that could be entirely proven incorrectly in court.
Yeah, it's really nice that our detectives aren't just superheroes, right? Like, I say that from the sense of like, well, they didn't find the exact thing that's going to make sure that this guy is guilty as hell. Instead, we actually have to see two sets of legal representatives actually do their job and be clever in this moment. And Rich, you talked a little bit about the idea of like, you have these two public facing jobs at the beginning and they're going head to head in the first one. I really loved just how much this terrible, terrible man, Dr. Edward Oster, was such a dick throughout this entire trial, to make it in conjunction with his lawyer being a dick, that you're just like, well, if these guys fucking lose, like, I don't know what to do with this show right now. Like, but I'm truly
the hero
of
this trial is a juror who is an extra with no lines, who they pan across and has the most insane Flock of Seagulls haircut.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's 1990, baby.
That is such an incredible haircut.
The jurors in this show were like the extras doing the most in this entire series.
You will be judged by a jury of your peers. Really cool peers.
But
really cool peers from the Tisch acting school.
But as far as the general, like, the vibe of the order, the vibe of standing trial, I'm curious, Rich, for you, did this keep your attention as much? Because it's not beat to beat as much. We're going through the true rhyme and rhythm of a traditional jury-based trial. How did you have your attention? Was your attention still there for this?
Yeah, because they're introducing new lines of like evidence and like, you know, ways to pull in a jury and stuff like that. It's not just like going over the same stuff you just saw them find out, like from the witness testimony and everything. It is, the cross examination is different. You are getting red herrings left and right. There's just like a new place to throw in misdirection for the audience, and I think that they do a good job of like making that be as eye-catching, because like down to the wire you're like, oh my god, are they really not going to convict this guy, that kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
it really is there.
Well,
and for me, what I find so fascinating is that when we do get to the end of this, when we get our resolution, when we have this big twist that leads to an outcome, we have a one-liner of how did you know, a response. And that's it. There is no big cool down. Yeah. There's no big grandstanding and gesturing and now we're all back and done. It is, this moment is done, but the work is not done. It's kind of how it feels to me. Like, they're going to just move on to the next thing. We're not necessarily putting a neat little bow on a story. We're just dropping this crumb and we're off to the next day, the next case, the next beat.
Yeah, the DA having the like we were talking about earlier, you only get a sliver of their real personality.
Yeah, exactly.
They're distrustful of witnesses and they're extremely distrustful of perps, and that's like the only thing that these cops give us. And then the DA, you only, or the assistant DA, you only get that one sliver of, oh yeah, my dad was a fierce alcoholic. And that's how I could tell that he was drinking, like, before he took the stand, basically. And I mean, they do such a good job of, like, showcasing the ways that power dynamics and these, like, really in these institutions that everyone inherently trusts, a hospital, like, you have to trust the hospital. That's, like, the only people who are there to save you. And the power dynamics of that can just sour their ability to be trusted. And I think they just did a fantastic job of, like, picking which case to go with just for this pilot.
Yeah, it was really fun getting to see as Rich, you even mentioned, the idea of there's this case that's put together. You get a slap in the face from a defense attorney who's trying to just protect their client and make sure they're doing their job. Mm-hmm. And seeing that, okay, cool, we got punched in the face. Let's build the plan of how we're going to win this fight throughout this entire episode. And we do end with a form of justice being served, or at least we assume so. But gentlemen, I want to hear about things that you love about this pilot. Maybe things that you weren't able to give a little bit of shine to that you'd like to give a little bit right now. So Max, you seem to have one in mind, so I want to go right to you.
I got to give it to my MVP, the bartender from Happy Hour Catering, who absolutely... God, this
guy was pounding bourbons, dude.
This guy who's just making jokes about Oster's drinking and how, like, oh, he said hey to me every 5 minutes. I also was cracking up when it clicked for me that they had to call the bourbon Jim Green because they couldn't clear Jim Beam for this. And listen,
they could be the sponsor.
Give me a couple of fingers of Jim Green and let's call it a Friday. Like,
that's what I call it when I put a little bit of whiskey in my smoothie.
Rich, what about you?
I liked how realistic this case was. It was a showing of, like, how, like, rungs of power could be soured after a long time. Like, it is not a completely far off thought that someone who has been the reason that people go into medicine at this particular hospital is not capable anymore. There's a lot of shows that have copied that exact thing. I feel like the pilot of Scrubs goes into that a little bit, of just like Dr. Kelso's ability to care for patients at a particular moment because of their age. This one goes a little further, like having this be like an addiction that prevents them from doing it. It shows the amount of people who were going to bat for that person just so they don't lose their jobs or credibility themselves. It also showcases inherent racism within those structures of those doctors doing of Dr. Raza being like a potential victim of that. They all but like called out the medical school that he went to, saying that it like, oh, we can't trust him because he didn't go to Harvard Medical. It's like, I don't know if that school is not the Harvard Medical of India.
No one was like, where does that school rank out of all of the schools? It was very much just like, oh, he looks different, so he's not worth it. Like,
India has four times our population. They could have 10 Harvards. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that crazy of a thing, but it's like, okay, yeah, here's how this crime could get brushed under the rug. And it did five different times before this case. And I thought that was just like, it felt very real. It felt very real, like what they did and what they went through.
All right. So this is me appreciating this show 36 years later, because I didn't have to deal with something, or, you know, you don't have a writer's room thinking about something that didn't really exist in the popular culture, which is these dumb devices, AKA second screens. Mm-hmm. I love how throughout the 45 minutes of this pilot, I was attached to it the entire time. Like, I did not feel a second of an urge like I did for a certain show that rhymes with teacher to go to my second screen and say, ooh, what's happening there? Instead, this show had my full attention. And truly, that divide at the set at like the halfway point of the episode where we have that case and we transition it and we move over to that other side, I thought was just so, it was such a nice tone shift that was needed in the episode so that you're like, all right, cool. Now I get to use the left side of my brain.
Yeah, shout out to Ampersands for keeping Jeff's attention.
Yeah, I love Ampersands. But gentlemen, I want to talk a little bit about things that caused you pause. Wait a minute moments. Were there any moments that were maybe in this pilot that you were like, wait a minute? So Rich, I want to go to you first.
Yeah, the cops kind of making fun of victims is a weird thing that I guess could make it more dark humor New York-ish, but also calling an Indian doctor Gunga Din is fucking insane. That was like a truly nuts thing to throw in this script, and it definitely, I'll tell you what, did not make me fall in love with those cops. I'll tell you that right now. I'll tell you that for free.
Max, what about yourself?
Alster using a slur at ADA Robinette was a pretty wild thing to hear.
Yeah.
And then I also just have to get into Chris Noth's hypothetical about what would happen if he shot someone in the back because he thought that perhaps they were going for a weapon. And everyone's like, oh, you would have been fine. You'd be fine. You'd be totally justified. You're cool. Uh-huh. You're good, man. And just this nonchalant attitude to him trying to, I don't know, understand malpractice. And everyone's be like, yeah, you could kill a guy. You're good, man.
Yeah, for myself, I mean, we sort of talked about this, the idea of sometimes there are roles that are non-speaking roles or like roles that are not the main person on screen where it's almost distracting because they just make a choice that you're like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah,
and
dude.
There was a there were two things that caught my eye. One, the anesthesiologist, where they were like at his apartment and there was just the telescope at the top of his apartment that was obviously looking down on someone else's apartment.
Oh, no.
And I was like, that's a sign. That's a bad sign. Like that should be, that's a bad guy that you're at his apartment. But there was also another doctor that they visited and his assistant interrupted and she just gave Greavy and Logan the nastiest look I have ever seen in my life, that I felt it through the screen as if I was inconveniencing her. And I just have questions. I was like, what happened in her day previously? Like, why is she so upset with these detectives?
Bro, shout out to any extra who goes so far above and beyond they think they might have to throw out the entire day shooting, because that is Danielle was watching an episode of SVU just like the other day where they were at like a police academy graduation and everybody is like, you know, doing the whole thing where they're like celebrating, like it's not like a, oh my God, amazing, you know, type of graduation. It's no one's throwing their caps in the air or whatever. And then two of these extras dressed as cops just stand up immediately and dap each other up crazy style. Like they have like a secret handshake that they did for each other. And it was so distracting that it immediately took herself out of it.
I mean, that's just real New York, baby.
That's New York.
So speaking of extras that did too much and maybe changed the way that something was filmed, I'm going to shout out my aunt, Robin, who was an extra in The Irishman. And because she was being so sassy to Harvey Keitel, she actually got casted in a role as his wife in that movie. So shout out Robin Kirbis for being in The Irishman. That's what happens, and it's absolutely one of the funniest things in the world knowing that that's how she got that role.
Robin Kirbis, Action Bronson, that's who made The Irishman.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, we have one more question, and that's an in-flight question. This week's in-flight question comes from Josh in Arizona. And Josh says, it feels like this show is more famous for its spinoff than for the original. Is there another show that you think of that is more famous than the original or more beloved than the original? So I'm asking you, it doesn't have to be genuinely more famous than, but maybe something that you like more than the original. And Rich, you're nodding your head almost violently, so I want to hear from you.
For me, the obvious example has also been on my entire life, but it's The Simpsons and just outliving the Tracy Ullman show, which it was originally like an animated short. But there's The Simpsons might exist after I'm gone. I have no idea what the hell the future of that show is.
100%, it is 100% being in space, broadcasted to Bleeblorg and Blogblig, and they're going to really
come
enjoy...
on, man. Kag and Kodos are right there.
Nope. I refuse. Max, what about yourself?
I'm going to say NCIS surpassing JAG.
Oh, okay.
It's crazy because I just think that, look, JAG has over 200 episodes. NCIS has over 500 episodes. And I think also just in the pop culture universe and the way we think about these shows, I don't think about JAG a ton other than the fictitious version, which it was Vinnie Chase's first TV credit that got him his SAG card. But I think NCIS...
He got SAG from JAG?
Yeah, he got SAG from JAG.
Good for him, man.
But I think people think about NCIS more as like a pop culture marker, because that's also had all of its spinoffs. Like, that has 10 things of its own. So it's like the spinoff has all these spinoffs. So I'm going with NCIS.
Yeah, and for myself, I'm going to speak about something that I personally like more than the original, and that is Young Sheldon. I think that Young Sheldon is such a better show than The Big Bang Theory in this instance. And like, Rich, you laugh, but I'm going to just tell you, brother, it's a great show, and it really actually is a very well done single cam show that
this feels like a very watch. Slow overtime psyop to try to trick me into watching Young Sheldon. God, you guys, we should totally watch a TV rewatch podcast. Oh my God, can you believe that this fictitious person Josh from Arizona asked it, what's a show that is better than that was better than its original version? Oh my God,
what's a show where the protagonist is younger than in the original version?
Well, Josh, thank you for your in-flight Josh. Question. That is not fictitious.
There's never been a Josh in Arizona.
Rich, I just want you to imagine that Josh in Arizona is listening to you talk about how he doesn't exist and now questioning his entire life. But if
Josh, we're all brains in a jar getting tickled by a scientist. It's okay. That's reality.
If you want to be like Josh and submit an in-flight question, we take those every week on Instagram. You can also submit those at tvpilotslicense.com or shoot us a text and leave us a voicemail at 213-290-1713. Before we talk about the history of Law & Order, a quick word from our sponsor one last time.
At California Closets, we design for the little things. Take this moment of a parent walking across their toy-filled living room for a glass of water. Ah! And now, the California Closets version of that moment. Family room and home storage solutions by designers who get you. California Closets. More room for what matters.
Well, let's talk about the history of the show. 25 seasons, 544 episodes, and one film, and continuing to count. I do want to make sure that we mention that while this show started on September 13th of 1990, there was a pause. It ended on May 24th of 2010, 12-year break. And then it started back up again. During that time period, there were multiple attempts to try to bring it back on the air. TNT tried its hand at getting the rights to the property from Dick Wolf. A&E tried as well. And then NBC came in like 2015 and was like, what if we did 10 episodes just because people miss it? And Dick Wolf was like, no, I want my show back. Fully, and he won, so if you persevere, maybe you'll win as well. Let's talk a little bit about the ratings for the show. The first season of the show averaged 12.1 million viewers and was the number 46 show on television. Best season to date was season 12, which premiered on September 26th of 2001. And I wonder if people were feeling a certain way. That season also had the highest season debut at 20.68 million people tuned in for that season premiere. The season averaged 18.7 million and was the number 7 show on TV. So 2001 was a big year.
People were clamoring for New York content that year.
Yeah, people were
fresh off the Subway series. We're about to get the Strokes and albums coming out. It was a big time.
Let's talk a little bit about syndication, because I think that's where a lot of people watch this show. This show started syndicating in 1994 on A&E. It moved around a lot. It was on TNT up until 2019, but now you can find it basically on almost every single streaming service.
Just turn your TV on right now. It's playing.
It's on ION right now, and that is for free, and that comes on your TV as it stands. We talked a little bit about spinoffs in our in-flight, but I want to mention some of the spinoffs that the show had or inspired. SVU, Criminal Intent, Trial by Jury, LA, True Crime, Organized Crime, Law & Order UK, Law & Order Toronto, Criminal Intent, and Law & Order Code of Law, which is the Singapore version of this show. This show has had multiple crossovers, not only with series that were in the 90s, but more recently with the Chicago universe, which is just so fucking funny to me that we just have a Chicago universe now. That's that just exists, and we don't.
If only it were real.
Yeah, exactly. Chicago is just this made up place. The Bean isn't a real thing. Fuck you. As far as physical media, there are so many VHS sets and DVDs that I just don't have the time to talk about. Let's talk a little bit about awards. 276 nominations and 42 wins. That includes Mike Post. We didn't talk about Mike Post at all in this pilot, but he is responsible for all of the music in this show.
Bow.
He won 10 BMI TV Music Awards.
Dude,
for
yes.
The music in this show.
All deserved.
This show won a Peabody Award,
won a
combination of 6 different primetime and creative Emmys, a SAG, a Writers Guild. But surprisingly, nobody was slimed in the making of the show, and there are no surfboards.
Oh, Jerry Orbach here. Didn't win a surfboard?
No one won a surfboard. No one was slimed by at a Nickelodeon TV award. I'm very upset about these two things. I want Chris Knopf to be slimed more than anything in the world.
Oh, he gets slimed in it just like that, buddy.
Yeah. But that is the history of this show. And Rich, it's time for your game of the week.
Sure as hell is. All right. Well, you don't make TV for 36 years without having some fun facts around the show. Let's do a couple of those. Law and Order in some form has graced the TV screens consistently from 1990 until now, my entire life, as you can tell. And here's a couple trivia questions about the franchise. The famous dun-dun sound is to mimic the sound of a jail cell door closing, obviously.
Obviously.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I'm just hanging around in prisons all the time, Rich. You know me.
You've seen a TV show. You know what a prison door sounds like. Okay, yeah, well, it was obvious like for me, I guess. Not
like that's what it sounds like. Yeah. Boing, oing, 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 oing.
Okay. Wow. Jeff on minute 53 of this podcast and your daughter have the same sense of humor. All right. The famous dun dun sound is made to mimic the sound of a jail door cell closing. The person who created the sound for this show used a hammer hitting an anvil, as well as what other sampled sound? A, an NYC police car door closing. B, the chandelier hitting the ground during a production of Phantom of the Opera. C, the sound of a gavel hitting a judge's desk. Or D, a stomp from a Kabuki theater production.
I'm going to say D because I have a theater degree.
What about you, Jeff?
Oh, gosh. I want it to be the Phantom of the Opera so badly that I'm just wishing it into existence. So let's go with that.
You guys are both big time theater kids. It is a 500 person collective stomp from a Kabuki theater production.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. They were like, they heard it. They heard the person who made the sound heard it live and then decided to sample it the next time.
I was waiting for you, Rich, for one of those to be, it was from the production of Stomp. You know, that everyone...
Well, what is Stomp, but not Kabuki
Someone
theater.
Got a trash can lid and fucking went to town.
Logan and Greavy should look into that Phantom.
Oh, God. All right. There was a Law and Order movie. Yes. A 2-hour TV feature film. Jeff, you might know the answer to this then. I'm sure this isn't a shock to real fans listening to this, but the one actor from that Law and Order movie eventually became a franchise regular. That actor was A, Jerry Orbach, B, Ice-T, C, Mariska Hargitay, D, Alfred Molina.
I'm going to say D, Alfred Molina.
I'm going to say Jerry Orbach.
Oh, neither of you got it. It was Ice-T. Ice-T was in a 1998.
Oh, fuck yeah.
It was a 1998 2-hour TV movie called Law and Order Exiled. It was lukewarmly received. but then Ice-T ended up playing Finn on SVU and became the longest tenured black actor in TV history.
Become Hell a long yeah. way from lukewarm Ice-T.
Well,
good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so much for your game of the week. Gentlemen, our flight is coming to a land, but before we go, I have two questions for you. And the first is based off the pilot and the pilot alone. Are you watching 36 plus years of TV and catching up on this series?
You're asking if I'm going to watch my entire life's worth of legal procedurals?
There
no.
are 543 other episodes and a film for you to watch. Are you going to start to take a chunk out of that? And the second is, this is a show that is very much distinctly done in two parts. Do you want to see more TV that's divided up into separation, or maybe that takes this sort of fun tool and uses it to make its show a reality? So, Rich, I'm going to start off with you.
I mean, there's always going to be room for legal procedurals. There's just going to keep being more crimes. It's just like it's almost acknowledging or tipping its hat to like the fact that the legal system is going to keep continuing. There's going to keep being more reasons to have the legal system over and over and over again. They have not run out of crimes. But as it goes for this show, I will watch more of this show as I see fit, but to watch 500 plus episodes of this show sounds like an undertaking that would be fit for a crazy person right now.
Max, what about yourself?
I mean, I don't know if I could forgive them for killing off Eric and Jane in the pilot, but I'll try. And yes, I definitely would watch episode 2. Look, buddy, let's slow our roll. Let's get back to the point of this podcast. Did it make you want to watch another episode? Yes, it did.
Yeah.
I'm also really intrigued by watching episode 6, the original CBS pilot Same. Of this show. I find the dynamic and how they split it up very fascinating. I like how it keeps moving from scene to scene. And since I got so many people in episode 1 alone who I know from other things, I got to see where we go in the 90s with these casting. For your second part, I do think the idea of more shows that have a clearly defined part A and part B is interesting. I think that it creates this natural shift where it picks back up again. You can't afford to get too bogged down in one part of the plot because you have to eventually give it up and move elsewhere. And I would be intrigued to see how that format would work in other professions outside of a legal procedural.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and for myself, I'm committing to 543 more episodes of TV right now. No, I will.
I know you are.
I'll definitely watch episode 2. I probably will actually be going immediately to episode 6, though, because I want to see what CBS considered to be too much for TV. Because like that's just intriguing to me. That might just be like a regular episode of 911.
Well, not even that. They thought that there weren't any like breakout stars. They didn't think there was anyone in the ensemble that was going to be the face.
I actually do agree with that from the pilot that I saw, because the people that you associate with the long run of Law and Order are not in this.
Yeah. No, you know? But that's 36 years of TV, though. That's the beauty of it. As far as that part 1, part 2, I'm 100% down for it I think it's a really fun writing exercise to go through if you're aspiring to write a pilot yourself and try to take that challenge and say what type of show would work for not only a pilot with that idea, but for multiple episodes, because if you have something where you can say, hey, I have 10 episodes where I've taken that plot, that device and that question and been able to write out like ideas for multiple episodes behind it, I think you have something that a lot of people would be really, really interested in moving forward. But gentlemen, that is our flight and the plane has landed. But before we go, I want to make sure that folks can find you wherever you want to be found. So Rich, where can folks find you?
You can find me slamming six bourbons and testifying in a legal trial. And also, you can find me on Instagram at Damn That's Rich. You can find original sketch comedy for Max and I over on TikTok at Dadwagon Comedy.
Max?
You can catch me folded a classic New York City slice, baby. It's the water. And on all things social media at Maxwell Singh.
And you can find me at lunch, but hey, do you guys see that cop? I think he's followed me the entire way here. But if you're looking for me on social media, you can find me at Run Jeff Run. If you're looking for the TV Pilots license, you can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also see our smiling faces on YouTube. Thank you for liking, subscribing, leaving comments. We're almost at 200 subscribers on Spotify, which is so fucking exciting. But if you have an in-flight question, you can always submit those at 213-290-1713. You can also go to tvpilotslicense.com to keep up with the latest from us. If you want a sneak peek of some of the stuff that we have coming up, make sure to check out our Instagram. But with the plane landed and the seatbelt sign off, we look forward to flying the bright skies of the TV world with you again soon. Until next time, keep your eyes on the skies and your fingers on the dial.
This episode is dun dun. Nice.
California Closets, we design for the little things. Take this moment of a woman getting dressed for an early meeting while her husband's still asleep.
Ah, sorry.
And now, the California Closets version of that moment, featuring custom soft close drawers. Bedroom and home storage solutions by designers who get you. California Closets, more room for what matters.